You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
It became not even really about the business for me. It just became joy and life to see how far can I push this? How far can I go? I went on point for the first time when I was 27 years old. Pef Medalski at Step said, "Why aren't you taking my point class?" "Oh, I couldn't do that." She goes, "Why not? You're doing 3 and 4 pirouettes, you know, in ballet and clean. Why aren't you doing this?" I'm like, "Okay." So she told me and I went down, I got the shoes, I strapped on those hard things with nothing inside them and did double pirouettes on point inside and out. The first day, ecstatic, came off and pulled off those bloody shoes, just happy as I could be.
Hey, what's going on? It's me, Roscoe, founder and host of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you're interested in trying out Built for the Stage, you can go to the website builtforthestage.com to try a free trial. 7 days of workouts of our flow program, which is specifically catered to performers to enhance their mobility and flexibility, conversations with coaches. Yeah, try it out, builtforthestage.com. Thanks again to Broadway Podcast Network for producing the podcast. You can check them out at bpn.fm. All right. As always, we have an exciting guest for you today. She'll be helping us out extending our series, Fitness on the Broadway Stage, but we're also going to cover a whole lot more with her. She's actually a 10-time Broadway show veteran. Super excited to have Paula Leggett Chase on the podcast. Welcome, Paula.
Hi, Joe. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. So nice to see you on the other side of the screen as we are in this thing called 2020.
Yikes.
So for everyone listening right now, Paula made her debut in the original company of A Chorus Line. And later on, she was also involved in Damn Yankees. Damn Yankees was one of the shows we'll be highlighting in this series. But since we have Paula on the podcast and she is a seasoned vet, she has a lot to share with us. So we're just going to kind of touch on Damn Yankees and probably take a quick right and start talking about the plethora of other exciting things that we have to talk about with Paula. So first off, like, how is it to just be a part of that iconic show, A Chorus Line, like from the beginning? You know, that's something that just has to be a legacy that you carry with you through life. That you, wow, what a just, I would feel so lucky. I would be like, I was a part of the original A Chorus Line. It makes me giddy just pretending. So how does that make you feel?
Oh, it's really amazing. But look, I have to jump in here and say, I was part of the last year of the original cast, because when the thing started, I was 14. I mean, I remember being down in my friend Paula Evans. I remember being down in her basement and she had this record album and she put it on of A Chorus Line. And we were listening to it and Tits and Ass came on and we were giggling and we were, oh, it's just something else. And so the really amazing thing about that is that show ran long enough for me to grow up and be in it. You know, I think I was, No, I was even younger than that. I did A Chorus Line. I was 28 years old when I went in the Broadway company of A Chorus Line. And I got to do the last year of it. And it really was an amazing thing. It's a Pulitzer Prize winning play. It's, I'm sure everybody you've ever talked to who has ever done A Chorus Line has a really great feeling for it, because you get to use so much of yourself. And I did. And it was a stupendous Broadway debut. I first came in and I covered Judy and Sheila. And then very quickly they added Christine for me, because I've always been a comedian. I mean, they're all funny, all these characters, Sheila with her big heart and funny, and Judy just dancing everything front and center and full out, but funny, you know, funny and the insecurities and all the joys and the ups and downs of growing up, you know, growing up and making your way. And then of course the layers of what it means for us as performers. So yeah, I really dug A Chorus Line.
Speaking of us as performers, we all are in a very unique situation right now. Mm-hmm. What were you in the midst of when the shutdown officially happened? You were kind of sharing with us about that before we hit record.
Oh, well, I was in Tootsie, and Tootsie closed January 5th, I believe, and January 6th, I started The Unsinkable Molly Brown. And that was with Kathleen Marshall, had reached out to me, and somebody had left it. And I actually was with that show, almost 10 years ago. I had did several incarnations of it, readings, and did a new play sections that they did at the Denver Center. And so asked me to be in it. And it was like coming home, but it was a much smaller, pared down event. And so we got to play some really great roles. And that's what I was doing. I actually got a Drama Desk nomination for that. And I had a feeling we were going to close. And I remember it was March 12th, and I was getting ready to go out the door, and Beth Malone called me, because we were traveling down to the theater together. And she said, "It's over. We're not doing the show." I had good friends that were coming down to see me that night, and other people that were coming, and I had to call them. And I remember I just burst into tears, and I thought, well, show's closed. It happens. You've been around for so long. Why are you crying about this right now? And I think it was the first time, I mean, you cry at closings anyway, but it was the first time that I had done my last show and didn't know it was my last show. You know, the night before I had done my last show and I didn't know it. So I hadn't been able to really wrap my head around it. So we all went down and thought, I better go down there and get my stuff before they close up the theater. And we all kind of played some music and hung out on stage. And then pretty soon, you know, all the city closed down, and that was that. So, you know.
I think as performers that were currently employed when the shutdown happened, they have you yourself as well, have a unique opportunity where, you know, how the saying goes, you know, live each day like it's your last. Right. Essentially, as performers, you actually got to experience that. But yet, you know, whether it's spring of 2021 or whenever it might be, you'll get to live to see another day, which I think is a unique gift to have, where, you know, it lifts the importance and the gratefulness even more as performers when you've lived through something like that.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, I mean, it's so funny, you know, here I've been around for a very long time, and I still have those feelings though. I said to my husband yesterday, "Oh God, will I ever sign into Half Hour again? I mean, will I?" And he said, you will. I'm like, okay. Yeah. And I know TV and film will probably come back a little faster. And it's just, it's a huge change in every way. I mean, I think it's, you know, 9/11 was a huge change in the culture, and I think affected everybody. I mean, in a very different way, but in a huge way, it changed how we travel. It changed all so many things about our lives, just our daily lives. And I think a vaccine will hopefully come, but this will change. You know, this will, even when things are back, I think it's a shift in our lives. Mm. Definitely.
How, if you can recall that back in 2001, how was that during the return, and how was that with just the feeling of, reality being altered a bit?
Well, I have two boys. I have an 18-year-old who's a sophomore at NYU online, remotely. Mm-hmm. And I have a 23-year-old who is working for Deutsche Bank and online. He's actually going to start going in for a few days a week. But for them, I was pregnant with Dashiell when the towers went down. And Kyler was in nursery school. And I was, very close to, that was, September 11th, and my younger son was born October 23rd, 2001. When I talked to them about, we were just talking about travel in general and what that means. I said, I find it stressful going on planes. Not that I'm afraid of flying. It's not that, but I remember when you just got on a plane. You just got on a plane, you just went up there and your family came with you and they went to the gate and it was no big deal. And if you forgot something, probably someone in your family could run up and hand it to you on the plane. I mean, it was very, very different. So my boys know nothing of that world. So I think that's an interesting thing for them, going through all the security measures and everything that were put in place after 9/11 and the TCA, all that's nothing. That's just normal for them. But for me, I can remember things before and how that was. And so I think that's something that illustrates that, of how there's a change. And for, young people forge their way ahead. I'm like, how are they going to do this? How's my son going to do online school, do the classes all online? I'm like, what a bummer. And he was kind of like, but they forge ahead, it's just, this is what it is. And they get on with it. And, and I think that's great. And I think all of the young people are going to, they are going to make New York live and breathe in new ways. And I think they will find opportunities in the chaos and destruction left behind from everything being shut down like this. I absolutely believe that.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
With your vast career, with your accomplishments and the ups, there are inevitably going to be downs, and I just am curious to know how you have kept so consistent in your career, and also maybe how fitness was involved with that, if we can tie fitness into this as well. I love to kind of, with our listeners, parallel a pursuit of fitness with a career in the theater. Because as we say in fitness, that your fitness is never owned, it's rented, and that, you know, you have to keep pursuing that daily. And as far as a career in the theater business, you know, my opinion is that it's the same. You know, you never own the stage. It's never yours forever. And you have to keep either putting the work in or doing your due diligence to make sure you quote unquote earn that right to be up there.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. So tying fitness into it. Obviously I'm a dancer, and that's been a huge part of my life. And I think, you know, and here I am now, I am now 59 years old, and I am still, you know, I'm still kicking and stretching and doing my things. But yeah, I actually came into dance kind of late. I was, I'm almost 5'10", but I was a gymnast when I was young. Isn't that crazy? Not a really great one, because they couldn't make the uneven bars wide enough for me, because I would hit the ground or my hips wouldn't wrap on it correctly. So there was that. But I probably should have been dancing, but everybody has their path. And but I always could go out in the middle of a dance floor and like tear it up, right? That was always something I could do. But when I all through college, I was a voice major. And I was very active in a group called the Singing Hoosiers, and I actually choreographed for them. Mind you, I couldn't do a double pirouette, but you know, I could move around. So fast forward, I'm in New York, and I can sing really well, and I can read music like just instantly, just great, because from all my training at Indiana University. But people wanted me to really dance. And I remember going into a class and talking to a teacher afterwards, and he would be like, oh, and he told me when he first seen me, he was like, oh, she can dance. Oh, no, she really can't. Oh, she can. No, not really. Because there would be things of my, you know, my technique that were lacking. So I went on this quest. I went on scholarship at Steps. And I took class all the time, and I was waiting tables and doing pirouettes when it got slow in the restaurant in the late afternoon in their mirrored tiles, you know, in Midtown. And I, when I did start to book jobs, I kept at it. When I was on the road with, I did Cabaret with Joel Grey, was my first production contract. When I got that, I auditioned for the Broadway company as a singer and was typed out. But then when the tour was going out right afterwards, I went in as a dancer and I booked it. And, I remember like after we did the dancing and then it was time to sing, and I was like, yes, let's go. And then but on that tour, we pretty much did 1-weekers, and I would find the ballet company in every city, and I went to class. And I took, sometimes it was so incredibly humbling, but I got really, really good. I mean, really good. I had the gifts and I had the talent, and it became not even really about the business for me. It just became joy and life to see how far can I push this? How far can I go? I went on Point for the first time when I was 27 years old. Pef Medelsky at Steps said, why aren't you taking my Point class? Oh, I couldn't do that. She goes, why not? You're doing 3 and 4 pirouettes, you know, in ballet and clean. Why aren't you doing this? I'm like, okay. So she told me, and I went down, I got the shoes, I strapped on those hard things with nothing inside them, and did double pirouettes on Point inside and out the first day, ecstatic, came off and pulled off those bloody shoes, just happy as I could be. And so I come to it all kind of late, and it's really a treasure to me. It's something that I love very much. And it's, even though I can't begin to do what I used to do when I was younger, it's still a huge part of my arsenal, a huge part of my toolbox. It's something that I bring in everything that I do. And I always will. I always will. I know I will. And I think I loved what you were saying about like that dedication to a career of performing and the stage. You do have to stay at it, and you have to And in the same way that you do with dance, with fitness, and you also have to go at it with a little bit of kindness to yourself too. If you overdo it, you can, you know, I would go to an audition. Sometimes you can't get every job. And there are times you're going to be disappointed, and you have to just like understand that. You go and you eat pancakes and you go to bed and you get up the next morning and you take class, and that's how you do it. And so, you know, I try to be kind to my body and like remember how old I am. And because I have worked so hard for so many years, a lot stays with me. And now when I look back, I'm grateful for the gymnastics because I can still walk on my hands. I can still do a back walkover. I can't do an aerial walkover. I can't do a front walkover anymore. It's too much torque on my back. But I still can do a lot of things, and I don't have fear of being upside down. So there were times when I was younger, I was like, oh, why didn't I start dancing more seriously younger? Everybody has a journey. And that's the lovely thing about getting older. You look back and you kind of understand all of the pieces that put you together and make you be you. And at least for me, I feel like I can love myself, appreciate myself, appreciate others in a kinder way, because I have a lot more security in myself than I did when I was younger, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Wow. You're fabulous. Thank you so much.
I talk
for sharing
a lot,
that.
Don't I?
No, I was just like internally thinking like, wow, just listening to like this amazing wisdom bombs from you right now. Thank you so much for sharing all that. Truly. Let's just touch on Damn Yankees, since this was a part of it. I'll just ask you this one question. Just like,
okay.
I know it's for you, you're sharing off the recording that physically for you, it wasn't the most demanding show. But for the male ensemble, basically talk to me just about what it was like maybe in rehearsal when Vicki Lewis as Gloria was jumping off that second level into the guy's arms. That's just,
it was just fantastic. I mean, Vicki is just an incredible talent. She's got a belt, like what I call a turbocharged belt. You know, I mean, it's just almost otherworldly, and like it just comes from her basement and out of that little body, you know, that little darling body. And so here she was just, you know, keeping up with them. And she's a great athlete herself and dances quite well and has this great voice, really great comedian. And so in rehearsals, the men folk in that show were extraordinary, all of them. They were all really, really wonderful. And so Rob Marshall, who did incredible work on this show, and just the details of each of the characters and what they were like and what they were about and the eccentricities of all of it was really, really impressive. Gregory Jabara playing this kind of Neanderthal guy, but sexy, you know. And you had Michael Barres and the amazing Scott Wise, these guys with great tricks, Joey Peasy. I mean, it just was, it was an astonishing group of men. And so watching them, I would watch them work and they would, and she was totally game for all of it. They would toss her from up high. I think they had built something, this was down at Old School 890, and they had built a kind of dugout thing to work with, you know, to jump off and do that. And then they did that number, the Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Mo, and they did it on the Tonys. And I remember, if you can see it, it's on YouTube and it's just incredible. And it is at this speed because, you know, you only have so much time on the Tonys. And so you have to go really fast to get it through. And so it is at this incredible speed. And it was already really just a killer to do every night in the show. So they were just astonishing. It was so fast.
Thanks for that. Share with us about your time in the pajama game. And I know that was one of your favorites you had mentioned in your career.
Yeah.
And just that's, like, What made you, quote unquote, live up on that stage every night doing the pajama game?
I think of the pajama game, which is also a Richard Adler show. And unlike Damn Yankees, the pajama game really, really featured the women. And I've always been a person, I've done a lot of revivals, and I've also worked with Kathleen Marshall quite a few times. And in fact, she was assisting Big Brother Rob on Damn Yankees, which was when I met her. And so I have done several things with her, including the Kiss Me Kate with Stokes and Mara Maisie. And doing the pajama game, it was a point where, you know, I had come from doing a Chorus Line, and I had done, Crazy for You, Very Showgirl. And so getting to do the pajama game, I got to play this really, really great character. And I remember I got to go when I was getting my wig done and talking with Marty Pakladinas. He was there with Paul Huntley. So it was like a joint thing when I came in to get fitted for a wig. And I said, I would like, and this, you know, the show is set in the 50s. And I said, I would like to have a hairdo where I'm this, you know, it's in a sewing factory. They make pajamas. I would like to have a hairdo that shows that I'm one of those women who kind of had this hairdo that she loved in high school, and she's kind of never lost it. You know, she's older, but she still keeps that same hairdo. So let's say it was kind of like a Betty Grable hairdo, but it has a little nod to the 50s. So I had this updo that was kind of like the Betty Grable looking over the shoulder World War II pinup shot, but with a nod to Lucille Ball because it had the curls and everything bouncing around. And then talking to Marty Pakladinas, I got to really be a part of it. And when you put on a costume with people like that, you really know who you are. And I had some ideas. And then when the whole thing was on, I really knew who I was. And it marked a time of me really showing in my career. Here I have all of these tools, and I have some age, and I'm a comedian, and I just really enjoyed the creativity of it. Hernando's Hide, also my husband was the dance arranger on it, which was amazing. Hernando's Hideaway was a joy. And it was just this jewel of a show. And I really, really felt good about my work in it. And I loved doing it. And I feel like it really made a lot of people who maybe had just had me in kind of a pile of tall, pretty girls look at me in a different way. And that was really empowering. You know, you change in a career. Every 5 years or so, things change of how you view yourself, how the others view you. And, you know, you go with that on that journey. And sometimes it's kind of hard to go, oh, okay, bye. That's who I used to be. And now I'm this. But I found that like a really significant, wonderful thing for me at that time.
Yeah, fabulous. Well, hopefully everyone listening just is taking all of this and hearing obviously Paula is directly saying, but indirectly we can take so many just golden nuggets, I'll say, from just like what she was saying, to adapt, you know, to be adaptable, whether it's in your career or whether it's with the people you surround yourselves with, or it's in fitness. It's life is ever changing. So those that kind of thrive the most are those that are able to pivot and adapt. And I think that this coronavirus has shown us just that, you know, who can pivot, who can adapt, who can just morph into this new stage of life.
Well, I think it's astonishing what some people are doing now. Marvel at it, you know, but truly I think people will find opportunities in the chaos, and that's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. Paula, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Thank you for having me. I loved it.
Our pleasure. Okay, everyone, that'll do it. Thanks so much for listening to Built for the Stage podcast. Once again, that was Paula Leggett Chase. You can check out the description of this podcast episode. You could see where to follow her on Instagram and just some other details about her. So thanks again to Paula for joining. If you want to try a free trial, go to the website builtforthestage.com. And don't forget about our friendly producers at Broadway Podcast Network, bpn.fm. All right, it's me, Roscoe, signing off.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.